It's the middle of the night. Dev should be heading home, but Dev is no ordinary cabbie. The tired, the tipsy, all are welcomed into the warm bosom of his cab, however late. Others make U-turns, but Dev's compass stays true. And while it does, he knows McDonald's are there with a Big Mac, fries and a cup holder full of warmth. Serving times apply, but with over 600 restaurants open 24 hours, if you're awake, we're awake.
Blog Talk Radio.
At the Big Dog Hunt. Joe Stazak along with my man Steve Callis here for another 45 minutes cutting edge radio, insightful comments, Callis remarks with Steve Callis and yours truly, Joe Stazak. A lot to get to today. Let's go right at it. Steve Callis, my friend, how are you?
I'm good, Joe. Everything okay, I hope. Looking forward to this week's show.
Yeah, it's a quarter of the way in the books. Can't believe it when you think about it. 25% down, 75% to go. Let's work backwards. Let's start with last night's game in the National Football League. Eli versus Sammy Sleeves, and Vikings are 4-0, only three undefeated teams. The Vikings, Eagles, world champion Broncos. Eli does not have a lot of success in many. Let's start with what everyone's talking about, and I don't know if you're tired of talking about it, but we got to get to Odell Beckham Jr. Phenomenal, phenomenal talent, but he keeps imploding on the sidelines in games. Xavier Rhodes got in his head a little bit last night. He only had three catches, 23 yards. What's going on with this kid, number 13?
Yeah, not to defend Beckham because he's a fool. He may not understand it if you heard his comments after the game. Oh, nobody bothers me. I mean, it's just so stupid. In his defense, though, the only thing I'll say is the first hit was definitely out of bounds. There should have been a flag right there.
It was.
And, and once he goes off the rails, and he was off the rails like he was last week, once he's off the rails, he's not coming back. And it's really now frightening after a couple of games because it really has cost him on the field and has cost the Giants. So he bumped the ref, by the way. I don't know if that's a suspicion, but he bumped the ref. And you know, it's the old, it's like you're talking to your 10-year-old. Yeah, you were right, but. Yeah, you got hit out of bounds, but. Welcome to the NFL. And you know Norman's given every corner the playbook. So every corner's going to try and do this to him.
He absolutely did. I mean,
right.
This
and
is
it worked
how it
last night.
Into his head. Yep.
Yeah, it's very sad. I mean, look. It's hard for me to talk about the Giants after last night because the New York football teams are in deep trouble. I'm sure we'll get to the Jets later. But Eli's never good in many. It's almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy. But having said that, the Giants, you know, we've talked about the Jets' incredibly tough schedule. They're going nowhere, in my opinion. The Giants have a pretty tough schedule as well. I don't know if they're going anywhere. They paid $200 million to bulk up their defense. And, frankly, it might not be enough. They're not great in the linebacker position. They're very, you know, decimated, if you want to use that word, in the secondary. So unless those front guys can get to the quarterback, and I mean quickly, the Giants are in trouble defensively. And, again, I don't think it's that Eli can't click with Beckham. I think it's that Beckham loses his mind at some point, see the last two games. And while 2 weeks ago he had some pretty good catches and runs, yesterday he was virtually a non-factor. I think that's more him than Eli can't play well in Minnesota.
Yeah, 23 yards and take away because he got a 15-yarder. So he basically netted 8 yards last night. And you know, I did hear the comments. I'm thinking he doesn't quite get it. Just like you said, Steve, he may be right a lot of these situations. And Josh Norman really, you know, set the blueprint. Why does he need to engage as much as he does, in your opinion? Because oftentimes he gets himself out of a route. He'll initiate contact like 12 yards down the field just to kind of get back at the defender from the last play. And then he kind of gets taken out if the guy then gives him an extra shot, and then he freaks on the sideline. Ben McAdoo, the head coach of the Giants, and Herm Edwards had a nice take on it today. I think you got to pull him and sit him down and say, you're not going out there unless you get your head out of your, you know, your backside. Is Ben McAdoo a guy who would do that? Do you think that would help? Would Tom Coughlin have done that? I mean, he hasn't scored the ball this year. Hasn't scored since late in last, you know, last year. And this started when the Carolina Panthers and he, and like you mentioned, Josh Norman, you know, teed off, squared off last year, and hasn't really calmed down.
I don't think McAdoo is going to do it. He's a rookie coach, and one of the reasons I think McAdoo isn't going to do it, because you will recall last year, Coughlin would not take him out of the game when he was going through that absurdity with Josh Norman on both sides, both teams, and the referees. But even Coughlin said, I got to win this game. So at the end of the day, it's all about winning. This guy, if he can calm down a little, is a huge part in their winning. He is one of the premier receivers. I don't rank him 1, 2, 3 like some people, but I do rank him top 6, top 7, precisely because he can't keep his cool. So he's going to wake up one day and figure it out, but I don't think they're going to take him out of the game. And that might be counterproductive. You know, the apologists, and there are Odell Beckham apologists, well, he plays with such great passion, and this is really the way he is. But, of course, all these guys have passion. You know, there's a lot of diva wide receivers, but most of them can keep their cool enough and take it out on the guy with catches and running around him. This guy, I'll tell you the other thing that I think, and this might not be politically correct to say, you know, Beckham's a small guy, 5'11", maybe 6 feet. He wears his hair in that weird color. There certainly have been remarks, published reports, that Norman got under his skin by calling him the equivalent of effeminate. I don't know exactly what he called him. But then now when you're challenged, and you hear this from Beckham, when you're challenged as a man, he said it yesterday, well, if they're going to challenge me, I'm not going to back down. Well, if they're going to challenge you and you're not going to back down, then they're going to get a nickel corner who can't play to challenge you, and you both get thrown out of the game. And maybe then and only then will Beckham wake up. But it is a gigantic problem. And again, this is old news. You know, this is last year all over again. And now he's done the two of the four games. He almost knocked himself out with the practice kicking thing last week, if you saw. I mean, he literally almost knocked himself out when he hit where the field goal kick is practiced on the side. He hit that with his helmet, and the pipe came down, hit him in the head. They said he had a welt. So you got to be a little smarter than that. And once again, it's like a fumbler. Once you know this guy's fumbling, every time you're tackling the guy, you're going for the ball every single time. Yep. It's going to be the same with this guy. If you're a strong corner who can run a little, I think you're going to see this every week.
I've said, before we move on from Odell Beckham Jr., I said that catch he had against Dallas last year, that one-handed catch, was the best I've ever seen. Does the Michigan cornerback Jordan Lewis, does his interception, I don't know if you saw it against Wisconsin, is that in the same pantheon? I thought that was damn impressive.
I think it is, because it was like a backhanded one-handed catch.
Right?
And he
was basically diving. He was like, you know, horizontal.
Right, but isn't it fascinating? This is how you get creativity to the next level. You don't really think about these one-handed grabs. There have been one-handed grabs, but more kind of almost into your chest as you're catching it. But
yes.
Beckham, I thought, changed the game. He must have big enough hands to palm a basketball, because he literally did catch it with one hand. He didn't even grasp it like into his body. He just went up and caught it. I think since that game, I think we've seen 10 or 15 incredible one-handed catches. So I think years from now, you'll tell your kids maybe, oh, Beckham was the first, watch this catch, and the kid will go, I've seen 50 catches like that. But that's not the point. The point is his was the first, but I have seen really in college and the pros since then, I think a lot of receivers now said, hey, maybe I can do that, whereas Beckham was really the first one to certainly practice it. You know about his famous practice before the game where he practices this stuff. I think he was the first to certainly practice it, continually do it, and then you're right. To me, that's still the greatest catch I've ever seen, although this interception in the Michigan game was just extraordinary. But I think now people are actually thinking, hey, maybe I can do this, and they go out and try it, and they can do it. It's amazing.
It's amazing to do it. It's one thing to do it in your backyard or
in
the practice field, but in a game situation, just incredible. Both incredible catches. I'll still give it to Odell Beckham Jr. It was a touchdown. It was against Dallas. A night game, national TV. Speaking of the actual game that was played last night, Giants could beat 24-10. Vikings, don't look now, 4-0, and Sammy Bradford, 4 touchdowns, no picks. If this continues, I know we're only four games in, a lot can happen. Teddy Bridgewater, and I didn't really criticize Rick Spielman, the general manager of the Vikings, but I thought that the Eagles kind of fleeced them for the first round pick and a fourth round pick for Sam Bradford. Rick Spielman, obviously knowing that his defense, this was a window for him, and Teddy Bridgewater goes down with a knee injury, and they look around for the best quarterback available. It worked out for the Eagles. Working out real well for the Vikings. Does Teddy Bridgewater see the field again if this continues? Is Sam Bradford a better fit for Minnesota because he's more of a pocket guy?
Well, you know, that's going to be a tough question because he's beloved in Minnesota. But certainly, as far as I know, he's not coming back this year, right? So this is really an issue for next season.
It's
so
for next year.
Look, if Bradford, their window is this year and next year. Bradford, as you know, only had, I think the Eagles gave him a two-year contract, right? So he's got this year and next year. And it's going to be interesting because I wasn't even clear that Bridgewater is necessarily coming back next year. This was almost, you know the story, he almost lost his leg.
This is more severe than just
a torn ACL. So I don't know. My sense is if Bradford plays well and they go places, and right now Bradford's playing well, and it looks like they're going places, and don't forget, this is without Adrian Peterson as well.
I think
he's set up to play next year. And I don't know if there'd be an understanding that after that Bridgewater will come back. I just don't know. But, you know, Bridgewater, again, we went over it before, 14 TDs, 9 interception, was basically a little more than a game manager. Bradford, maybe with a better team around him all around for the first time in his career, 26 for 36, 362 against a supposedly improved Giants defense, you know, one TD, no interceptions. So I think Bradford is right now the guy for the job, and I think this is the best situation he's been in as well in his career in the NFL.
Certainly looks like it that way. Looks like it. Rick Spielman helped the Eagles out, helped his own squad out, and it's working out well for both teams so far. Again, only 25% of the season in the books. When we were talking about potential quarterback controversies that may or may not happen, the Dallas Cowboys going to San Francisco down 14 points. Dak Prescott, the rookie, still hasn't thrown a pick. 2 touchdowns, no interceptions, brings them back. They win a game on the road. I know it's San Francisco, not a very strong team, not a lot of talent, but still on the road, a rookie, very composed. Tony Romo, it's been 6 weeks since the injury. He may or may not be back. I think he will be ready to play at some point this year. What does it do for the team? Either way, if they decide to go with Romo, and would they go with Romo when he comes back if Dak Prescott is still playing this well? And what are the team – how does it affect the team, the players, when they see, hey, we're playing well with Prescott? And, I mean, we can play well with Romo, but we're in a rhythm now. Does that affect the team either way?
Well, you usually don't lose your job because of injury unless you're Drew Bledsoe. And generally speaking, Jerry Jones has already said – you know, that Romo starts when he comes back. So this isn't coming from the coach. This is coming from the owner. And he loves Romo.
Is that the right call?
I don't know. You know, we talked about it, I think, in week two when Prescott played well. Is Romo the next Drew Bledsoe? I don't know that Prescott's the next Tom Brady. Nobody is. But having said that, they're playing well. They're confident. They're in a so-so division that has become really good, frankly, because of Carson Wentz. And the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, the Giants, the Washington, you know, they won again, but And to me, as we've talked about, it's not a great division, but there are four kind of middle-of-the-road teams where teams are now moving ahead, like the Eagles, and to a lesser degree, like Dallas. I think, look, Romo is beloved as well. Much more than Teddy Bridgewater, much more experienced. But the guy can't – what does he have, 2 playoff wins in 10 years? I go back to that fumble always when Bill Parcells was
the
coach. And if he could have picked up that fumble and run for a first down, never mind a touchdown, I think his entire career would have been different. But he's brittle. He's 36. The future is Dak Prescott. The question is that future in 3 or 4 weeks? And based on what Jerry Jones said, I think the answer is no. Is that a mistake? I said, look, Romo's loved in that locker room. He is a top quarterback, I think. He's not a great quarterback, but he is a top quarterback. And Prescott is clearly going to be in Dallas for the next 10, 12 years. They'll pay him whatever they have to pay to sit maybe this year and next year. I don't think they're going to bench Tony Romo. The day they bench Romo, his career is essentially over in Dallas.
Yep. Yep. He wouldn't see the field again. You mentioned Tom Brady. His suspension ended the other night at midnight. He's back from Italy. He's got a tan. He walked into the building. I know he's down there today. He's ready. He's raring to go. Of course, anybody who hasn't played in such a long time might have to knock the rust off. Of course, they face the Browns coming up, which is good for what ails you. They did get shut out by the Bills the other day, and Bill Belichick, none too pleased when Rex Ryan coach team, you know, beats him or anybody beats him or anybody shuts him out. First time they've been shut out at home since 93. Does that just add a chip to this situation, and what do you expect from Brady right away? Is it a full playbook, or are they going to ease him in despite the fact he is Tom Brady?
Yeah, I think it's a full playbook. I got to tell you, and I think I've mentioned this on the air, unfortunately, my son is a diehard Patriots fan because of video games from before they won their first Super Bowl when he was like 8 years old. Flash forward all these years, he's actually flying from Oakland to Cleveland. I'm going from New York to Cleveland, and we're going to the game with his uncle, who is a diehard season ticket fan in New England. We're going to go to the game. This is not a game I have to see. They have to see, but I'm tagging along because you don't get to see your kid much when he lives in California. But I think, you know, to me, this is post-Deflategate, just like it was post-Spygate. You'll recall they went 18-0 before they lost to the Giants, thankfully, in that first Super Bowl that the Giants won, you know, in the Eli Manning era. And I don't want to be – you know, I got a lot of friends in Cleveland because my kid went there to college for 4 years and worked there his fifth year. I know a lot of people in Cleveland. I do some radio work in Cleveland as well. And I just, you know, just batten down the hatches. The Browns have been able to compete. You know, same with Washington. They were down 24-20 in the fourth, you know, late. Yep. They find different ways to lose. But I think this is much more. You know, Gronkowski has hardly played, one reception for 11 yards against Buffalo. I don't know if they take the wraps. I don't know if they take the wraps off the hip because Martellus Bennett is probably better than 25 starting tight ends in the NFL. And here comes Gronk. So I think they're going to be better than Gronkowski and Hernandez, Gronkowski and Bennett. And I think they're just going to try and put up 40 or 50 on everybody, including the Browns. So I won't pick them when we get to that. But I am looking forward to going to it. I've been to a couple of Patriot games in Gillette, again, because of my son. I'm a Giants guy through and through, and in those two Super Bowls, you know, Eli's 2-0 over Brady, whatever you think of Eli versus Brady. So I don't think they're going to miss a beat. I think Belichick is mad because if there's one coach who does get under his skin, even though he beats him virtually all the time, it's Rex Ryan, and give them credit. But if you watch the game, the first play from scrimmage for the Patriots was 90 yards, called back. Edelman caught a swing pass at like his own nine and ran to their one, but called back. They missed a field goal. Brissett fumbled on that. He's too dumb to slide. Again, all these quarterbacks need to take Russell Wilson lessons, which we'll talk about him against the Jets. He knows how to slide. Yeah. And so, yeah, it was a bad game overall. But even diehard Patriots fans are thrilled that they're 3-1, and a lot of them think they're going to be 15-1. Now, the big game of the year, we'll talk about it some other time, is when they go to Denver. They have a lot of trouble against Denver in Denver. It was their Achilles heel last year. They play them in the regular season this year. If you flash forward, other than the Steelers, if you flash forward, it might wind up being New England in Denver again, unless New England does run the table and Denver loses a few games. I don't know if they can beat Denver in Denver. That's been their Achilles heel over the years.
I agree. They came up just short of the Super Bowl last year with that unbelievable pass rush that Denver put together. Let's talk about Seattle real quick, because you mentioned the Seahawks, you mentioned the Jets, of course, and I know that's your squad, that's in your wheelhouse. The Seattle Seahawks really have kind of turned things around, and Russell Wilson playing at an extremely high level. They're 3-1. Believe it or not, they're tied with the Rams. We'll get to them in 1 second. They're 3-1 also after a 28-0 loss to open the season against the 49ers. But your thoughts on what Seattle has done to kind of turn things around after they had also lost to the Rams?
Well, Seattle was pretty bad at the beginning last year, too. And, of course, you know I picked Seattle to go come out of the NFC and lose to the Patriots in the Super Bowl. I think their offensive line is a little better. They had maybe the worst offensive line in football last year. Their offensive line wasn't good early. This Ifedi, their first-round pick, a starting guard, apparently they think can actually be the leader of an offensive line as a rookie. He played well against the Jets. You know, the big story in New York was, does anybody know where Mohammed Wilkerson is? Because he wasn't on the field, apparently, against Seattle. And I have to say, their defense, which I thought was a great defense, especially their front line, is very weak in the back end. Revis isn't Revis anymore. Revis is good, but he's not Revis. He also got hurt last week. Their secondary is not very good. So if that monster front line that's hard to run against can't get to the passer, you're going to see Russell Wilson 23 for 32 for 309 and 3 TDs, no picks. So it was also an interesting game. You know, I don't like to bet against the Jets. I don't like to bet against the Giants. But since I'm two games under 500, I'm going to start doing that when it calls for it. I thought this was, you know, this is the first time since they won the Super Bowl at MetLife that Seattle was at MetLife, and Pete Carroll made a big thing slash joke about we're staying in the same hotel, we're doing everything the same, and I'm not saying that helped, maybe with familiarity, but I think the biggest thing for Seattle now is Jimmy Graham is Jimmy Graham. Jimmy Graham was nowhere last year. He had his second plus 100 plus yards receiving. Talk about an incredible catch, that one he made on the sidelines early in the game. And the thing that scares me for the Jets, and the reason I will be picking the Steelers this week, is this Christian Michael, who's a nice back, he's the backup, Rawls is hurt. He only rushed for 58 yards, but he had some gashing runs up the middle of that Jets defense, which was virtually impenetrable last year, and for a couple of games this year. So I'm a little concerned. Look, offensively, they got 11 turnovers in their last two games, the Jets. So that, you know, obviously that's a big problem. But to see Christian Michael run through that line a few times, not a lot, a few times, whereas in the past you couldn't get, if you got 3 yards, that was a huge run against the Jets interior linemen. So maybe they just had a bad game. Maybe Seattle's line is a little better now, but for Seattle forward looking, I think they're the best in the NFC. And with Arizona and Carolina being Arizona and Carolina, I don't think they really have much competition other than, of course, the Vikings.
And I was going to mention that Ryan Fitzpatrick, 9 interceptions in the last two games. What are the Jets going to do at quarterback?
I think, you know, they have 4 quarterbacks on their roster, and right now they have no quarterbacks. I mean, I don't think.
Yes, that's correct. Don't they have Christian Hackenberg down there somewhere?
But they don't think he's ready. Geno Smith,
he's
obviously.
Not.
Geno Smith is, you know, off the. If he couldn't get in a 6 interception game where they still had a chance to win, I don't see how they're playing him. You know, they might look smart now on the one hand for giving Fitzpatrick a 1-year deal, but they might look dumb on the other hand because a lot of people think Fitzpatrick, like Kirk Cousins early on, Cousins is playing better now. Both of them are on 1-year deals. Cousins got franchised, and Fitzpatrick agreed to 1 year, $12 million. He wanted 3 for 36, which if you look at a few other deals, isn't so crazy. But now the Jets, I don't know if they're congratulating themselves because they're terrible. And as we've talked about since the beginning, you know, I said it would be a miracle if they're 3-3 after 6. And they're going to Pittsburgh this week, not the place you want to go. So they might really be 1-5. They have Arizona the next week, and you can say Arizona's down. But those are both on the road. And then when we talked about their first 6 games, we then talked about we didn't talk about their 7th game because at the time it was the Ravens who were terrible last year. And now the Ravens look pretty good this year. And that's without 2 games against the Patriots. So I think the Jets are, you know, this is, we could do this for 45 minutes some other time. The unfairness of the schedule in today's NFL, because last year the Jets had one of the easiest schedules, 10-6, just missed the playoffs. Look at our improvement from 4 or 5 wins the year before. The sky's the limit this year. And then you look at their schedule, and if you're objective, you're like, oh, my goodness, look at these first 6 games. How are they going to be 3-3? And the answer is they're not going to be 3-3. To me, there's no way they're going to beat the Steelers and Arizona on the road. And even if they do, then they're only 3-3, and then they have the Ravens and still 2 more with the Patriots. So I think it's unfair as opposed to the old days where everybody played everybody the same amount of time, And the unfairness in schedules now, the Jets are the perfect example. Again, I think they had the easiest schedule or the second easiest schedule last year. And this year, I think they have the sixth or seventh most difficult. You know how they do it with win percentages from the prior year, blah, blah, blah.
Sure.
But you didn't
sure.
need a calculator or a record to look at their first six games. If you're objective, a lot of Jet fans aren't, a lot of Giant fans aren't, a lot of football fans aren't, but if you're objective, you look at the Jets' schedule and you go, we have these first six games, and then we have the Patriots twice, and I'll say it again, the Ravens in Game 7, they could easily be, you know, 1-6, 2-5. That would not be surprising, nor was it surprising to me, as we talked about in the first week, because that's a brutal schedule. They don't even get a chance to have a couple of softies, or at least games that they can win, not easily, but win. Every one of these games is a battle, and frankly, their defense hasn't been up to snuff. And Fitzpatrick, I don't know if he's just, you know, losing it now. He's got the same outward whatever, and good for him. But 9 picks and 11 turnovers in two games is 9 picks and 11 turnovers.
And that's just not going to get it done. Steve Kallis, Joe Stazek, here on Sportsology. Steve, the Sam Bradford, the only former overall number one pick with a winning record right now. He's 4-0. Jameis Winston, 1-3 with the Buccaneers. Andrew Luck, 1-3 with the Colts. Matt Stafford, 1-3 with the Lions. Carson Palmer, 1-3 with the Cardinals. Cam Newton, 1-3. Alex Smith, 2-2. Eli, 2-2. Biggest surprise of the teams that I just mentioned there, you have the NFC champs at 1-3, and they just got slaughtered by the Falcons the other day. And you have the Arizona Cardinals, kind of a chic pick to maybe do some damage this year. They've turned the ball over 10 times in the last two games. What's going on with some of these teams with these highly touted quarterbacks? You can see all the rookies having success, but some of these vets, highly acclaimed vets, not faring so well this year.
It is amazing. Well, I think Carolina's big mistake is they let Norman walk, and their secondary is incredibly weak. Now, I think I told you a few weeks ago, I went to California and I saw the Raiders and the Falcons at the Oakland County, Alameda, whatever, dump. And again, I like watching the Raiders. I like what the A's have done over the years, but my goodness, I can't believe they play in that place. But to see the Falcons live, sitting in the end zone, but again, think of the upper deck of a baseball stadium in Oakland. They have one that's higher than the upper deck. It's like they added another 2,000 seats up there for 2,000, Raiders lunatics with, I'm putting this in quotes, reasonable prices. But to see them march up and down the field, like, I don't like to sit on the 50-yard line, Joe. I don't know about you. I like to sit in the end zone because you can see guys run patterns. And, yeah, it's a little tough when they're 90 yards down the other way. But you always have the notion of what the pass patterns are, what the running holes are. I much prefer it. And to see the Falcons – and look, their defense is terrible, but to see the Falcons do what they've done, and I might even pick against them this week because they're playing Denver. We'll see now, the rubber meets the road. But the Panthers, I think, gave up on their secondary. I'm not saying they should have kept Norman. Maybe they should have franchised him. Obviously, he's one of their most valuable players. You can see that now. And look, Cam, I saw a stat. Maybe you saw the stat. Since Cam Newton has been in the league, he's taken 300 more hits than any other quarterback in the league. And yes, he's 6'5 and 245. And yes, you can make an argument he's the quarterback of the future. There aren't many guys like Cam, 6'5, 245. You have the Russell Wilsons, who are, 5'11. But again, he knows how to slide. Cam doesn't know how to slide. Jeremy Brissett doesn't know how to slide. Fitzpatrick does not know. He takes it as a badge of honor. It's only a matter of time till he gets hurt. And maybe Jet fans will be cheering then. I don't know. But the point is, he's on the concussion protocol. Carson Palmer's on the concussion protocol. I don't know if these guys rested on their laurels, but the Panthers clearly made a big, big mistake by letting Norman go, because they can get into these kinds of shootouts with the Falcons and lose. Keep in mind, they were 15-1 last year, and they've already got three losses, which is more than they had the whole of last year, including the playoffs. Plus, you don't know where Carson Palmer is. You don't know where Cam Newton is, so you don't know where those teams are. I'll give you the one complaint about picking games on a Tuesday. This is not an excuse, but, for example, they're both 1-3. They have to win this week. But I can't pick them if I don't know Palmer's playing, and I can't pick them if I don't know Cam is playing. You might know that. Well, they're playing, Cardinals are playing Thursday night, but you'll know. But I'm staying away from both of those games. They're must-win games. I don't care who you are, you start 1-4 unless you can run off 11 in a row like the Chiefs last year, which is very rare in today's NFL. You're in a lot of trouble.
I would agree with you, Steve. All right, we're quarter way down. MVP of the NFC, MVP of the AFC so far, in your opinion?
Oh, boy. I'm going to go with, and I'm not a Big Ben fan, but I'm going to go with Roethlisberger because I think getting back Le'Veon Bell, you saw what they did last week. I think he's going to be the guy. I can't pick Tom Brady, right? Just kidding. I would never pick Tom Brady. But of the first quarter.
I wouldn't have a problem if you did, but go ahead.
Of the first quarter, I'm going to go with Big Ben. I mean, the Broncos are undefeated, but that's defense-related. I don't know if Simeon's playing this week or not. He's done, you know, the Broncos are what they were last year. I mean, Peyton Manning wasn't good. You know, so I don't see a guy, you know, you want to go Von Miller, he's played well. But if I had to pick one in the AFC, I would pick Big Ben. And you're going to laugh, but it's really between the in the NFC, to me, it's either going to be, I think it might be between two Philadelphia Eagles quarterbacks. So Wentz, I don't know if it's a shock. Maybe I'll put Wentz out and I'll pick Sam Bradford for the 4-0 Vikings and Matt Ryan for the Falcons. You know, Matt Ryan, you know that game that they won. That was the first time in the history of the NFL that a quarterback has thrown for 500 or more yards and a wide receiver is caught for 300 or more yards in the same game in the history of the NFL. That takes up a lot of ground. So, and again, I saw them live, and I think the Raiders are a good team. You know, I picked them to win that division. And, of course, aside from the game that I went to, you know, the Raiders have been playing pretty well. They've been pulling things out. They're 3-1. So I would say those would be my two in the AFC. How about you?
Yeah, I might go with Matt Ryan coming off that 500-yard game. Julio Jones, 300 yards. He had one catch for 16 yards against the Saints, and then he comes back a week later and just annihilates the Panthers. We'll see where that team is defensively down the road, but right now I'd give it to them. Or I'm not going to laugh at those two picks. I mean, Sam Bradford, 4-0 with the Vikes, no turnovers, and Carson Wentz. I know he's not on the on everyone's mind. He didn't play this past week, but he's been phenomenal. Hasn't turned the ball over. The Eagles are undefeated. The Vikings are undefeated. But I'll still give it to Matt Ryan. He put up some gaudy numbers the other day. In the AFC, I might actually give it to your the leader of your squad, Derek Carr. I thought going into Baltimore and knocking them off, they were undefeated. Although not a great Baltimore team, but that's still pretty impressive. He had four touchdowns, three of them to Michael Crabtree. I'll go with Derek Carr. You want to go defensively? I don't. But, I mean, Von Miller has been Von Miller. Five sacks, and he's just incredibly disruptive. And I have no problem giving it to Ben Roethlisberger. I could not argue that. He didn't have a great game in Philly, but he comes back and just crushes the Chiefs in the next week. What a turnaround that was from losing 34-3 to just annihilating the Chiefs. I think he's the best. Since Brady's been out, he's the best quarterback in the AFC for my money. I'll go with Ben. Once Brady's back, all bets are off. But I think he is the best quarterback in the AFC and has been quite impressive. All right, time for the much maligned picks section for you and I, Steve. Last week I believe you had the Lions, Broncos, and Chargers. Am I right on that?
Yeah, I was 1-2 last week. I'll just give you the 30-second no excuses, but I'm actually watching the end of the Charger game. They're up 13 with the ball, less than 6 minutes left. How am I losing? And the way I'm losing
about,
is
I thought
the
about
way
you do, watching that game.
The way I'm losing is two fumbles, not one, two fumbles in their own territory. They punch it in for 14. You know, my son calls it the dreaded you're up 13, the dreaded you're up 13, because two touchdowns, you lose. And once again, the Chargers were an example of I'm off the Chargers now because they're – and you lose the dreaded 13. They find ways to lose, you know, different ways every can't blame Phillip Rivers. He did throw two picks, but – again, they're up 13 with the ball, less than 6 minutes to go. The first fumble, the guy ran 8 yards on first down, so you think they're going to get a first down, and, you know, then it's going to be 4 minutes, then 3 minutes. But No excuses. 1-2 last week. I'll give you my three picks quickly because I want to do some baseball. But I'm going Vikings -5.5 at home over the Texans. Broncos -5.5 over the Falcons. And that's, in my opinion, the Broncos will slow down. I don't know if they can stop. But if anyone can stop the Falcons, it's going to be the Broncos. And finally, I'm going to go Steelers -7 over the Jets. It's almost a come on pick because the Steelers were so great last week and the Jets were so bad. But I think the Steelers' difference, frankly, and I know it's normally big, but it seems to be humongous this week, this year, is the road versus home. The Steelers looked like the worst team in football 2 weeks ago against the Eagles, and the Steelers looked like the best team in football against the Chiefs. So I think with Le'Veon Bell back, though, I think the three – you can make a case – I'll include the Vikings in the NFC, but you can make a case the three best teams now will be the Steelers, the Broncos, and the Patriots, all in the AFC, and they're going to play each other at some point. But those are my three: Steelers -7 over the Jets, Vikings -5.5 over the Texans, Broncos -5.5 over the Falcons. How about you?
Well, real quickly, last week I went 1-2, 6-6 on the year. Thank God I had a 3-0 week last week, or I'd be, you know, as bad as advertised. I had Miami +7 on Thursday night. Cincinnati waxed from 22-7. I had Atlanta +3 over Carolina. We know how that went. I took a shot with Tampa Bay over the champs at home +3, and Denver just pretty much took care of them. I'm never a big Jameis Winston fan. This week, almost out of principle, I would not lay 10.5 on the road normally, but I'm going with the Patriots over the Browns, laying that big number. With Brady coming back, this is a statement. This is a lesson game. We'll see. You're right. The Browns have competed, and stranger things happen. The NFL is a week-to-week league, as you just mentioned, the Steelers and some other things that have gone on with the Chiefs and then the way they played against the Steelers. Steelers, the way they played against the Eagles, and then came back the next week. We had the Lions +3 over the Eagles. I know that the Eagles were like, you know, 106-0 after the bye with Andy Reid. At least it seemed like 106 years with Andy Reid, but I'm going with the Lions. It's on the road. It's a tough place. Any road game is a tough place for a rookie, and he's been unrattleable, Carson Wentz, but I think the Lions bounce back. They're getting 3 at home. Eagles still have to prove some things to me, so I'm going with the Lions there, and going with the Texans. They got embarrassed by the Patriots. Came back with a win last week over Tennessee. I'm taking them plus the points over the Vikings. I think the Texans can maybe keep that close and maybe rattle Sam Bradford a little bit into becoming the Sam Bradford we saw in Philadelphia. So there it is, my friend. I know you want to talk some baseball. You know, let's do it. The wild card is upon us. The O's and the Jays tonight. Chris Tillman, Marcus Stroman. Who do you like? The winner, you know, advances to play Texas. Who do you like in that one?
Yeah, well, actually, I'm going to go – I don't even know who the favorite is. I didn't look at anything here. But I'm going to go with Toronto because Stroman has been pretty good against the Orioles, and Tillman has not been so good against the Blue Jays. Plus, it's in Toronto. I know home field is not as big in baseball as in football, for example, but I think that means something. And also, I saw this stat that Trumbo, who led the majors with 43 homers, only hit one home run against Toronto this year. So I kind of like the pitching matchup. Tillman has given up 7 earned runs in 13 innings this year in his last 3 outings. That means something. And Stroman has only given up 6 earned in his last 20 innings for a 2.70 ERA versus 4.85. So I'm really playing pitching matchups. We know nowadays it's not like it used to be where the starter's going to go 8 or 9 innings. But I'm going to go on the pitching matchup, and the Blue Jays are at home. And they do have a tremendous lineup, you know, as do the Orioles. I mean, the Orioles hit an incredible amount of home runs. I think it's between the two of them, though, in the season series, which is Blue Jays 10, Orioles 9. That's why the game's in Toronto. I think Toronto actually hit one more home run than the Orioles. So at least that's negated. But we'll see. I understand Tillman's got a much better record, et cetera. But I think Stroman has been pitching well lately, and he's pitched well against the Orioles. So I give Toronto a slight edge. I don't like either team because I'm a Yankee fan. I would like to see Buck Showalter win a World Series before it's all over. But, you know, he's got to get by tonight first.
Okay, over in the National League, tomorrow night we have the Giants at the Mets. It's an even year, so we know the Giants are dangerous in even years, and they got Madison Baumgartner versus Noah Syndergaard. Baumgartner 4-0 at Citi Field in the post, and they swept the Dodgers. Or they seem like they're rolling a little bit into the postseason. Who do you like in that one, my friend?
Yeah, I'd like the Mets to win and stay in because that's always good for New York when either team. It's not like I'm a Met hater because I'm a Yankee fan, but you have to go with Baumgartner. If he can get to a couple more World Series, he'll be the greatest World Series pitcher of all time. He's 4-0
right.
with a 0.25 ERA. But Giant fans, not me, I got some friends who are Giant fans, though, remind me already that, you know, in 2014, he shut out the Pirates in this very same game. He's a big-time
right.
pitcher. There's no doubting that. And the problem with Syndergaard, and I read an article about this, like, 10 days ago, who do you want the Mets to play in the wild card game? And the conclusion was because Syndergaard is the worst pitcher in baseball in holding on runners. This year, 48 of 56 attempted steals were made, an 85% rate. Syndergaard just can't hold guys on. That goes for second as well as first. 35 for 41 guys stealing second base on Syndergaard. 13 for 15 guys stealing third base on Syndergaard. And
wow.
Darno is not a great thrower of the ball. And the Giants like to run. The point was we Met fans would rather play St. Louis because they don't run at all. But the Giants do run. Syndergaard allowed 48 stolen bases this year. That's the highest by any pitcher in baseball since 2001. Now, if you're a Met fan, you'll answer, well, Dwight Gooden has the all-time record. One year, I forget which year, they stole 60 bases against Dwight Gooden, and he's Dwight Gooden. So I guess they have arguments against this. Plus, the game is in New York. But Baumgartner is a pitcher for the ages, whether we like it or not. And I know about your even number thing, too. That's an interesting sideline. But you're right, 10, 12, 14, they win it all, and this is 16. But I like them more because of the pitching matchup. Not that Syndergaard can outpitch Baumgartner, but if they get out, if San Francisco gets base runners early, I think you'll see him taken off right away.
I know you're not big on this wild card situation, adding another wild card team. What do you think about the one game? I mean, you play, you know, 162 games, you get in, you make it to the post, being the second or first wild card, and it's one game. You know, you've already played 162 of them. Is it enough? Is it not enough? Should it be eliminated in your opinion?
I don't like it at all. I don't like it at all, but once you had one, I think it's fairer to have two. This should be two out of three.
I agree.
And they should probably try and do it Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. I know you have to leave Monday open for a playoff, so Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and make them start the next series on Friday. But I just don't like the whole notion of losers winning, and whoever wins this game is a loser. They didn't win their division. And again, in the old days – of two divisions, even in 69, when the Mets won it all, and that was the first year, they had to beat Atlanta. At least Atlanta won their division, and the Mets won their division. This notion of a wild card, again, baseball, the last sport where losers win, I thought that was a great thing about baseball. So I would prefer that they not have it. I would like the first thing to be 2 and 3. I would like all the other series to be, you know, 4 out of 7. I don't know why they have to do less than that. And if you go way back, you know, once upon a time it was 5 out of 9. I'm not advocating that. But to play 162 games and get knocked out in one game because you're facing a superstar pitcher, which could happen, is to me just not right. I view it as a play-in game. I don't view these teams as making the playoffs. I view the winner of this game as making the playoffs. It's like the NCAA where you play in to be one of the 64. I don't like it. But this is the system we have. And these are two interesting games. But, you know, it makes 500 teams in September. Oh, we still have a chance. We're still alive if we can only go 10-0. And that's what it's all about for all these sports, to keep you interested. The Knicks are 10 games under 500, but they might be able to get that eighth spot. And then, you know, lose by 40. It's not the same in hockey. I'm sure we'll be doing hockey. It's not the same in hockey, you know that, with the hot goalie. But generally speaking, the mediocrity of yesterday is we have a chance to make the playoffs and win the championship today. And to me, that's just not right.
Can anyone beat the Cubs in the National League? I mean, this game, yes, you're right. I think it's an interesting game. I'm going to watch it. I love watching Baumgartner in the postseason. But Can anyone beat the Cubs? 103 wins. Didn't quite get it done last year. They ran into a hot Mets team. Is this their year to take that next step?
I think it is. I know we don't have much time, so I'll just say no. I don't think anybody can beat the Cubs. I like the Indians in the American League before the season. Their pitching is terrible now. So we'll have to talk about next year when it's narrowed down. But I like the Cubs to win it all still.
All right, Stevie, appreciate your thoughts, your insights, your callous remarks, as it will. I'm Joe Stasek. We'll be back next week, same bad time, same bad channel. Stevie, enjoy the games. Enjoy next week. Good luck with your picks, and we'll catch up with you in about 7 days, my friend.
Always a pleasure, Joe. Take care.
You too, pal. I'll talk to you. So long, everybody.